I'm Matthew McCabe. Welcome to Miracle Voices. Each episode, we will be delving into stories of forgiveness, healing, and transformation that have come about from integrating the principles of the book, A Course in Miracles. If you want to learn more about A Course in Miracles, visit www.acim.org. If you'd like to visit the Miracle Voices site, please go to www.miraclevoices.org. If you feel inspired to make a love offering, please visit us at miraclevoices.org/donate. All donations go to support the work of the Foundation for Inner Peace, the publisher of A Course in Miracles. Now here's your program. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of Miracle Voices. This is your co-host, Matt McCabe. I'm here with my co-host, Tam Morgan. Tam, how are you doing today?
As usual, glad to be here. Always a highlight of my week.
Oh, good.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Very well.
Good. Yay.
First day of spring? There's lots to be thankful for. Isn't that right?
No. First day of spring was 2 days ago.
Oh, it was.
Yeah, okay. It was officially on the 19th. And I think it's because, I mean, usually it's between the 20th and the 21st, but I think it's this year because of leap year.
Oh, right. Somehow. Okay.
But there you have it. But anyway, happy spring.
Happy spring. And happy spring to our guest, Lisa Fair, who's also on with us. Lisa, welcome to Miracle Voices.
Hi, good morning. Happy spring.
Good morning.
Lisa, where are you joining us from?
I'm down here in Ajijic, Mexico.
Okay. Can you say Ajijic 5 times really quick? No, I'm just kidding. It's easier to say than to spell. Spelling it really quick, it's like my dyslexia takes over and it's all just like A-J-I over and over. Well,
get used to it.
Yeah, get used to it. Well, Lisa, you're down there in David Hoffmeister's community, right? Can you just give us a little overview of what that is so people can get a context?
Well, I would say we're a mystical community. There's probably about 40 of us, and there's 4 different houses where different people in the community live, and really just practicing forgiveness and coming together with a shared purpose, you know, really just to practice forgiveness. And I have known David since 2002. And believe me, it was a surprise to me that I'd be living in a spiritual community. It's like paradise here. So is there more that you want to hear about it?
No, that's a good overview. It was really nice coming down there. I think it was in 2018 and kind of experiencing that. It's kind of a beautiful presence there down on a huge lake, that Lake Ajijic, Lake Chapala. And it's just beautiful. It's kind of a little bit higher altitude, maybe a little bit. So it's not always, it's like a kind of an ideal weather all year round.
Yeah, it's like 80 degrees every day.
Yeah.
Sun and 80 degrees every day.
Don't get used to it.
Well, I am.
Well, okay. You'll have your lessons.
Oh, no. You mean don't make an idol of weather? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. I mean, you know, yeah. Climate change. Who knows?
Right.
But it's beautiful for now. And it's interesting to me. This is not where our podcast is going to, but there's a bit of controversy out with a new book about the community, because someone always has bad experiences wherever they are. And there's, you know, also things, you know, everyone has their own perceptions and everyone goes through their own experiences. So, you know, I've been called quite a few times in the past few days about different things about that community. And my answer is you get what you need there.
That's exactly right. You know, and I'm getting what I need too. I feel for me, this is, I don't know if you're aware, but like down here, especially in Ajijic, it's a huge hub of Course in Miracles students and teachers and I feel like it's such a humbling journey because it's like the depth of forgiveness that Jesus is calling us to, you know, and it's continual. And it's pretty obvious even in the Course community how we, you know, it's like pulling us to the depths. within ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, it's really deep time, actually.
Yeah, it is, you know, like anywhere else, it comes with life and every possible projection and every experience that you can experience to see how you want to choose to see it.
Right. And I guess for me, I feel like it really strengthens my faith in God.
Mm.
Oh, it's like in the storms. I was talking to my friend here before the podcast, and we were talking about the storms and without the storms in our life, you know, it's like there's no reason, like ye have little faith, you know, Jesus on the boat in the ship, you know, and it's like these opportunities to choose faith instead of this. And I don't know, just I feel like it all keeps deepening me and deepening me in my own relationship with God and to really focus on the faith.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yay. Let's hear all about it.
Yeah. Lisa, why don't you tell us how A Course in Miracles came into your life?
Okay. Well, I would say probably in the 90s, you know, I was pretty extremely depressed. And, you know, I was a single mom with two kids. And I used to watch Oprah all the time. And Marianne Williamson came on the Oprah show and started talking about God and about forgiveness and in a whole new way that I had ever heard anybody talk about God, because I lived in Pennsylvania and I lived in the very fundamental Amish and Mennonites and surrounded by very, you know, Christians. But really, I never really felt I had anything in common with them. And so I heard Marianne, and I mean, I was like, it was like an answer to prayer. And so I got Marianne's book, and then she talked about A Course in Miracles in the book. And so I purchased A Course in Miracles, but I actually could not read it for many years. I had it on my bookshelf. And then I actually went into a really dark, dark depression, and I became suicidal. And yeah, and I didn't have any faith in God or anything then. I was really lost. And during this prayer, it was like a real, real deep, deep prayer. It was, you know, I come to the point where I wanted to kill myself. And I was right there on the edge. And I screamed out to God with all of my heart. And I said, "Where the hell are you? You know, if there's a God in heaven, where are you?" And I went into some kind of mystical light experience. And it's this light appeared and it just started talking to me. And one of the things that it was really, really saying to me was to truly believe. And I had no faith in God. And I felt like I had totally left go of all my faith in the world. And it felt like it was my last ditch effort to, you know, like I could believe in something was God. And I used to have these Mennonite people that used to come and pray with me every Wednesday, Wilmer and Ruth. And they had been bringing the Bible over, trying to pray with me, trying to heal me. And then, so I went downstairs after this and picked up the Bible. And it just, I'm like, oh, I just couldn't even, you know, it was like, oh, I can't figure it out. And then I looked up on my bookshelf, and here I saw, it was like the Course in Miracles was like sparkling on my bookshelf. And I grabbed it off of the bookshelf and I opened it up, and it was, I swear, it was like birdies just started tweeting. It just totally consumed me. And yeah, so that was in the mid 90s.
Wow. And then how did you make your connection with other people practicing A Course in Miracles?
Well, I actually studied the course for about 8 years on my own. Mm-hmm. And went through some massive transformation, because, you know, I was so like clinically depressed that, I mean, I lived in my house and I didn't even, I would close the curtains. I had so much shame and so much guilt and so much unworthiness in my mind. And yeah, I feel like it was about 8 years till I met David, actually. But during that time, there was such a transformation of my mind, you know, just in my relationship with God and accepting my innocence. And, you know, I can't even put it into words. It was like I was falling off into these mystical experiences, and it was totally transforming my whole life. And, you know what, because I had gone to therapists, I tried to take all kinds of drugs, all kinds of things to try to get out of this depression. But no one ever told me to actually look at my thoughts. And so it felt like Jesus and the Holy Spirit were really pulling me inward into my mind and looking at all of my own attack thoughts in my mind. And also my identification, because I really believed that I was a victim of this world. And also another thing I remember reading, and it was the most surprising thing, that I thought that everybody else was responsible for my happiness. And to find out that I was responsible for my happiness was totally profound for me. I thought, are you kidding me? Because I, you know, had blamed the whole world for my situation. Because, you know, like when I was about 19 years old, I had a sister who had disappeared, and she was found about 8 years later, and her body was found, and she had been murdered and raped. And she, you know, and they actually found the person that had done this to her. And, you know, the whole situation back there, and, you know, when I was like 19, 20 years old, totally dismantled my family. The whole identity of the family concept was totally shattered. And so was my identity. And, you know, just totally dismantled everything. Like my mother kind of, you know, really went off. She left go of the mother concept after that. And, yeah, so I had lived in just this total victim story of, you know, woe was me, and, you know, this whole thing about my sister being murdered, and you know, and also then the man that murdered my sister was put on death row. And so I had so much anger at him for destroying my life. I really blamed him for my life, that if that wouldn't happen, that my life would have gone differently. And there was, yeah, and almost like I made my sister like an idol in my mind, that, yeah, that I used to have this huge picture of her in my living room on my fireplace. Like it was this constant reminder, because she was my total best friend, my total everything. She was my older sister. And I'd become so, you know, self-consumed. And when, you know, I guess for me, you know, one of the greatest things that I found out is, you know, for myself, was that I was forgiven, you know, that really, not just to say that, but to, you know, to really open up my own mind, to really experience my purity and my innocence, and that, you know, to really come into the present moment and experience, you know, the Holy Spirit, and to know that I had a helper, and to know that, you know, my real relationship was with God. And yeah, that the Holy Spirit was eagerly waiting to like remove all these thoughts and beliefs from my mind for me to experience this divine love. And yeah, and the miracle was, you know, because, yeah, just feeling just such a connection with God, I felt like I was saved, like completely saved, like in my mind. And then, you know, it was so beautiful because I would go into these mystical experiences for hours, actually just feeling God's love and feeling, you know, my own innocence. And then, you know, I would come out and think, oh my God, that was like the most unbelievable experience that I ever experienced. And I would pray and I'd hear, oh my God, I just want this all the time. I just want to know that you're with me. And basically I heard the Spirit say, you know, you need to give it away, give it away, give it away. And it was funny. The first one on my list was, Freeman May was the man's name, you know, who had murdered my sister, and to really, you know, extend my own innocence, my own blessing. You know, there's a Course in Miracle. What is it in the beginning, chapter one? It is the privilege of the forgiven to forgive, and to see that it was like a privilege for me to be able to offer that, you know, not, you know, in this moment, it was just like so divine. And, you know, for me, it was more about this experience, you know, that I was experiencing and praying, you know, for me, you know, before David showed up, this was like, you know, 8 years. But yeah. So then, you know, there came a point, you know, where I was praying for Mighty Mighty Companions, and David Hoffmeister showed up in 2002.
Wow. So did you ever have to testify or anything in this case?
I did. It was really a miracle. I never needed to tell him that or anything. I could cry when I'm telling you this right now. But I never really felt that I ever really needed to tell him that. It was between me and God and him. And it was a miracle because, you know, I realized I wasn't a victim, and that, I don't know, like just feeling his own innocence, like, you know, I don't know, just like it was all part of some plan. And I realized that my sister became, you know, not a symbol of murder and death and victimization, but of freedom for me. It was a miracle that she became a symbol of forgiveness. Oh my God, I can't tell you how elated. And then, you know, there were a couple, you know, journalists that had contacted me, and here they found out that, you know, I had forgiven him, and he was on death row. So I used to have to go to, you know, keep him on death row, but they found out that I forgave him, and they had another trial for him. And actually I was subpoenaed to go to that trial because they heard that I had forgiven him, and I was supposed to be there with him representing his side, you know, of forgiveness. And so, yeah. So they subpoenaed me there. And, you know, it's just such a miracle because I had to sit outside the courtroom because my family was on the other side, you know, and they sequestered us. And so they kept me outside of the courtroom because I was there to testify for him. But this miracle, I'm sitting out there and I'm like really just praying, you know, just praying, praying, praying. And it was hours and hours I was sitting out there and I was praying. And I just said, Jesus, I just want to know, you didn't know, you know, that you're with me, and, you know, tell me what to say and tell me what to do. And yeah. And I said, please, I just want to know that you're with me. Just please give me a sign. And listen, I opened up my eyes and there's this huge marble wall right outside the courtroom. And it was like almost like one of those ink blot things. It looked like almost like you couldn't see it unless you really looked at it. And here was this perfect image of Jesus in this freaking wall. And I totally like freaked out. And so I'm like, people are walking by me and I'm like, oh my God, do you see this? Do you see this? You know, whatever. But then, and so I just felt like Jesus was right there with me and just like, you know, just use me. So I got to go into the courtroom, and actually Freeman May was there, and it was the most beautiful experience that I ever experienced, because I never saw someone so desperately wanting to be forgiven. He was like holding on to the edge of the desk, you know, with his attorney, and you know, the jury was there and they were wanting him to be, you know, put on death row. And then I started just sharing with him, and it was like our eyes locked together. And I felt like I don't know, I felt like I was talking to myself and just sharing with him, you know, how much God loves him and how much it had changed my life. And I told him I wasn't condoning murder, I said, but I was condoning forgiveness, that I was here to represent that. And, you know, I don't know, just I felt like we were in this unbelievable, holy experience. Just as it was just me and him. And I don't know, it just felt so pure. And yeah, we were just, I felt like it was a holy assignment. And just for that moment, you know, just for that moment for us to experience God's love together. And what was so beautiful was like, he was just so desperately looking. He even held his hands on the edge of the desk, just looking at me, like, tell me, you know, who I am. And then it was funny because the attorney that was representing him said, oh, they'll never cross-examine you. So don't worry about that. And then all of a sudden, you know, I said what I had to say, and I really let go of the outcome. I really was not attached, whether I felt that that was my only assignment, was just to go there and share with him that. And here I'm going, I'm thinking that I'm getting up, and all of a sudden the prosecution says, you know, we want to cross-examine her. And here they said, is it true, Miss Fair, that you study a book called A Course in Miracles? And I said, yes, I do. And they said, isn't it true that in A Course in Miracles, that it says that, you know, that everything's an illusion? And they must have looked into A Course in Miracles. And so anyhow, they start talking about, so, you know, your sister, so basically your sister brought this on herself or something like that. And I said, I don't know, it was the spirit. It was totally the spirit, because I had no idea that they were going to cross-examine me. And all of a sudden it was like the spirit just poured out of me. And I said, well, you know, because I was a nurse, you know, I had been a nurse. And I said, well, you know, as a nurse, I said, I just know that everyone interprets everything completely differently. And all of a sudden they like slammed the thing and said, you know, whatever. They wanted to stop me from speaking. And it was so funny because I was like just sharing whatever. And then the judge, he says, sustain. He said, I want to hear what she has to say. You know, I want to hear what she's expressing here. And I don't know, the spirit just poured out of me and just talked about, you know, that this was the, you know, that this, I'm here to represent Jesus Christ. You know, I'm here to represent the truth of God and the innocence. And it doesn't matter if it's A Course in Miracles or it's a Bible or whatever it is, you know, that it was just, yeah, just representing the truth. And so I don't know this, you know, I have to say that it was the most beautiful gift. You know, Jesus, I feel the Spirit gives us so many beautiful gifts to be able to extend this, not for anyone else, but for ourselves. You know, I feel like that, you know, that was the beginning of, I feel like that's the ultimate experience, is my own innocence. I've never experienced anything in this life that, you know, offers me, you know, anything else. It's like, that's my connection with my source. And so anyhow, do you want me to continue on with this story?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I have questions. I always do. But
okay, well, listen, I want to tell you what happened. It's a miracle, because it's a total miracle, because I really didn't even, you know, have an attachment to what happened. So, you know, whatever, at that, you know, court hearing, they ended up, you know, convicting him again, and he got the death sentence, da, 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 da. Well, about 3 years later, my daughter calls me up and she says, oh my God, you got to look at the front page of the paper. She said, it's on the front page of the paper. They just freed Freeman May. And they said, or not freedom, they took him off of death row because they deemed him insane because he believes he's innocent. And that, and they said they had five psychologists examine him, and he is convinced he's innocent. And so because they deemed him mentally insane, and so they couldn't convict him because they couldn't convict someone that they deemed insane. So now he's serving life, a life sentence. So he was actually taken off of the death row.
Wow. Even his name is like, his name is May be a free man.
Listen, yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable, really.
Both names, Lisa Fair and Freeman May. He may be free.
Listen, I swear to God. Listen,
yeah,
listen.
I mean, the names are very mythic in this. It's really fantastic.
Listen, it's God. And I felt like, you know, because I, you know, that's all it's about, you know, like that's all it's about for me. That's all, you know, I feel like today, even, you know, it's about faith in God.
Lisa, I have a couple of questions. One, just because I didn't hear you when you said it, how long was your sister missing for?
She was missing for 8 years.
So starting what age to what age?
Well, when I was 19. So we had lived together. She was my idol. You know, she really was. She's my older sister.
And, yeah.
You know, she was my love of my life, you know, really. And then basically, you know, it was on my mother's birthday too. She just disappeared. We were going to meet my mom and she went to the mall and she just never came home. We could not find her. So it drove.
She was what age at the time?
What?
I was what age was she at the time?
21. She was 21.
So she was 21 and you were how old?
19.
And then she was missing for the next eight years. Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty intense. I mean, because you don't know what happens. I mean, I feel like when we found her, it was a miracle. And my mom really, you know, my mom never got over it. You know,
My next question.
What?
My next question is, how did your family handle you being on the other side of this with forgiveness while they were out to convict him yet again to death row?
Well, my family and me had been estranged. That was the whole thing. Like after my sister disappeared, my mom kind of lost it and she moved away and didn't tell the rest of the family where she was. And, you know, her and my stepfather moved away. My mom wanted nothing to do with family. She never celebrated another Christmas, another anything. So it was a total dismantling. And for me, you know, forgiving him was really letting go, finally, of even the family concept for me. I had to let go, you know, because I had some hope maybe we would all get back together someday, but it never happened. And I just had to really forgive, you know, even that whole thing, you know, like, but my family definitely was not for it. I mean, my mom told me and my mom really, after all that Oni ever had, you know, even before she died, maybe one real joining. And she said, you know, she just wishes that she would be able to forgive, but she was never able to do that. And, but we were already estranged. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
do you have any other siblings?
I had some half siblings, but we were never close.
Mm-hmm.
So it totally dismantled the whole family.
Yeah, of course.
Wow. Yeah. So I was kind of, you know, and that's where I went into the deep, dark depression, because I really felt, you know, all alone and, you know, totally victim, you know, no family. But I don't know, when I found the course, what I realized, but it was the most beautiful thing, because I didn't feel that I had any close relationship. And in the course, it was telling me that God was my one real relationship, and that I don't know, like I just put up all my heart into it, that's the only real relationship. And I want to feel that. I want to know that. And it was by experiencing his love and letting go of the past and opening up to a new and real experience. And, you know, it felt like, you know, I was saved and like it just became my lifeline, like God, you know. And today, I mean, it's even today, you know, I put all my faith in God, you know, and put all my faith in practicing forgiveness and devoting my life to this, and just such a transformation. I mean, you know, people, you know, that knew me back when this was all going on, you know, I was such a mess. I was dark, depressed, you know, crying all the time. You know, I just played my sad story all the time. And it's so beautiful because even the people that used to know me back then, they said, I'm totally a different person. It just totally transformed me, you know, into this beautiful, you know, I feel like it's made me a miracle worker and restored me completely to my source. I thank you for letting me share this.
Oh, of course. No, it's such an incredible story. I don't know why my mind is still stuck on a couple of details of it, but it's the 8 years. So she wasn't found for 8 years, and those are the 8 years that you fell into a darkness, let's say, right?
Well, no, I was in a darkness till I was 35.
Ah, okay. And so he was found the first time 8 years later, where she was found, and then he was convicted, and then you had more, the forgiveness didn't happen until after that.
Yeah, yes. Well, because, you know, the thing was, when me and my mom were estranged, you know, she didn't want anything to do with the family. And at that time, she still lived in Pennsylvania. And when they found her body, you know, I was so elated. I was so glad it was over. I couldn't believe it, you know, because my mom actually believed that, you know, which I have, you know, heard about this happens. My mom thought that I had something to do with it, or that, because I was living with her. So, you know, and it just is what the mind does. And so my mom thought I knew something and, you know, whatever. So when we found her, it was such anguish, you know, not knowing. And it was interesting, my mom, when they found her, the police called us in and they had, you know, her belongings. And my mom had been there first. I didn't know this. And then they had called me to come in and, you know, identify. Well, they wanted to hear the whole story. And then they asked me what she was wearing and everything. And then they showed me, you know, her belongings, you know, and I couldn't believe it. I was in shock. You know, there her ring was. And I was like, oh my God, you know, that, like, we found her. So I, as soon as I was done there, I rushed to my mom's house to tell her, you know, oh my God, you know, they found her, you know, and my mom became enraged. And it was funny because the detective said that she was just there and saw all these things and said it wasn't her. So it was like the protective mechanism in my mother's mind, I guess, denying it. But I was like elated because I thought we would be free then, you know, and that we would be able to be a family again. And, you know, but my mom was not, you know, so my mom just totally, yeah, didn't want to accept that.
And your mother, did your mother accept that it was her at any point?
Finally, she did, yes. Because, well, what they did then, because, see, they had just found the body, but then they, you know, they sent my sister's bones and things to Washington, D.C. and had some of her, you know, dental things, so the dental records, you know, verified that it was her.
Boy, what a journey. I'm very touched too that, you know, your perspective that you weren't there to free him or try and get him off the hook. You were there to forgive him.
Yeah, and I felt like it was an honor that, I don't know, like I had left to go in my mind. And I felt like it was it. And, you know, it's funny because like the FBI came searching for me at the Peace House in Cincinnati with David, you know, to, you know, subpoena me. And I don't know, I felt like it was like, I don't know, an honor for me in some way, but not for him, for me. I don't know, to finally, you know, because I feel like, you know, without him at that depth, because it had, I had been in such darkness for so long, and without me being able to release, I would have never been able to forgive him, you know, and I don't know, and forgive myself, because I became a murderer. That's what I could see. Like, I was the murderer. I wanted him dead. And, you know, and just, I don't know, just, I feel like it's such a symbol of God to me, you know, and you know, for me, that's not just with him, it's with everyone. It's for everyone. It's for all of us. It extends all the time, everywhere. Like, you know, that's what I, you know, that is my relationship with God. It's not about people, or, you know, it's about the thoughts that I keep in my own mind and keep my own altar clean so that I can be in that experience, because it's an experience. You know, I feel God's presence in my mind. It's like I can feel when I have attack thoughts. I can feel when the storm moves in. And, you know, and it's like, no, you know, put my mind in my faith and my heart, you know, faith in God, you know, what is real, what is true, you know, and that commitment. And it's, you know, it's like it's not going to be when there, it's not when you're in your comfort zone, that's for sure.
Well, you just answered Matt's next question.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I know, you know, when the storm moves in, we talk about the ego storm, or, you know, some people say the ego backlash. Lisa, when that does happen, do you have anything that you do to practically help yourself get back into a God-centered state so you can move, you know, allow that up and move through it and back and get back into a holy instant?
Well, I feel like all the storms that I've ever faced in my life, I don't know, really deep, I feel like they're all for me, so that it pulls me into prayer and pulls me into silence and gets me really present with what I believe. And, you know, just, I don't know, just really the invitation, like it's a continual prayer, you know, what is real, what is true, and where's my faith, you know. Like, you know, Jesus is on the ship, you know, in the huge storm, you know, and the waves are, you know, splashing everywhere, and the thunder. It's like, is our mind going to be on the storm? And it's like Jesus is putting his hand out to us and saying, ye of little faith, you know, where's your faith? And it's not, and he's like restoring our faith. You know, even he said, you know, it is your faith alone that heals you. And so it's like putting my focus on the faith in my heart, and really knowing that the devotion is to God, and you know, like hold on tight. Yeah, I don't know. And it's like somehow it awakens something in me, like it lights my heart. Then it's like, then I love the way that that feels. And then I keep my focus on that feeling, that it's like a light in my heart. And it's almost like something happens, like the storm disappears and the light becomes, I feel like that is what I want. You know, I want to feel that connection to God, especially in the storms.
Yeah.
I have a question about that too. It brings up, you know, we walk such a fine line in this practice. And I wonder, you know, I've seen people who have that experience and for lack of a better description, kind of enjoy it so much, that breakthrough, that they seem to attract storms in order to get to that point, instead of just saying, actually, I can live in that place without the storms to remind me. And it may just be a, for some, I mean, so many paths are so different. So the ones who I've seen, it may just be a step along the way to do that, but I feel like there's often a catch in that with some people, and I wondered how you felt about that.
I never heard that before. Well, I feel like whatever, you know, my journey has been, that's all that I know. I mean, it's been storm. I've had many storms. I don't know. I feel like it's really deepened my relationship with God. I don't know. It keeps me in a continual prayer.
Yeah. I mean, as I say, everyone comes to it in their own way. And I was just curious if you noticed that at all. I'm like, wait, I'm having a lot of storms because I really want my quiet.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you truthfully, you know, I do. I'm pretty much, you know, in quiet and prayer. I do a lot of writing.
Yeah.
I like to write. And so I feel like the last several years of my life, you know, when we were talking about the menopause thing, but, you know, it's almost like I've come into some still waters, very still and calm waters. Mm. And, you know,
I just want to say the menopause thing was not something we're referring to in this podcast. It was off. So people don't rewind, try and find the menopause thing. Yeah. But I hear that. And, you know, I have noticed for me that there are times in my life where I've loved drama so much specifically because when it got too big, I would snap into truth. And so it was almost a tool for me. I'm speaking of myself as one of the people who I just referred to. And then realized, you know, I don't need the drama to get there.
No.
You know, I feel like my life before the course was a lot of drama.
Yeah. So my God, was high drama. You're kidding? Mythic high drama.
Oh my God. Victim, boom, you know, blame. Oh, it was all the time. You know, that's what the thing was. I felt like I was in some, well, I was in a nightmare.
Yeah.
You know, and that I couldn't get out of, like, I get down and get back up. You know,
that's part of the Lisa affair. It was your own affair. You know, it has many meanings, that affair.
And it's about
on your own roller coaster.
Freeman May, you know, it's like, you know, it's like this freedom that Jesus is offering us. And, you know, it's just the mind training, you know, that's why I feel that I do live in community. It's not because of it's special or anything like that, because I need the help. You know, we're here as mighty companions, remembering the truth together. And there's a force in that, you know, where two or more gathered, there I am. And you know, that's what I want to remember. That's what my life, I want to remember God, you know, whatever that means, you know, remember the present moment, you know, remember the holy instant, remember the joy.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I want.
Love that.
Lisa, I know there's always a lot of people practicing forgiveness down there, and you've witnessed a lot of down there in Mexico. And you know, sometimes New Course in Miracles students will have the feeling, as I did, like I must be practicing this wrong, because as I start, things seem to be getting worse. And like the things I used to enjoy doing, I don't enjoy doing anymore. There's these crazy emotions coming up, and these emotional storms, and all these things are happening that didn't appear to happen in the same way before. Maybe I projected them or something else. I was managing them some other way. Can you just talk a little bit about any kind of themes you see on along that journey when, you know, course students, you see them working on it, and kind of like this darkness coming up or this guilt coming up for release, and how that's managed and what you witness?
Yeah, well, you know, especially living in spiritual community, a lot of people say, wow, I feel worse than I ever felt in my whole life, you know, because we're getting present, you know, we're getting present. We don't have all these distractions, you know, especially with us being so focused here, you know, it's very present and being very honest and being able to expose the ego. So I do feel like the minute you get on the path, it's like, you know, be careful what you ask for, you know, it's really having to face the darkness. So it does, you know, I always think, you know, it's actually a sign that you're in the right direction. You know, if you have these emotions and these fears and these guilt coming up, it's really coming up so that it can be healed, so that we can, you know, invite the Holy Spirit into our minds. And, you know, it's part of the journey. You know, the constant praying and listening and following. But, you know, for us, you know, one of the things, and this is, you know, for me, what I experienced, you know, we practice no private thoughts and no people pleasing in our community. And it's a profound experience, you know. It's profound in terms of, you know, it's like bringing the darkness to the light, and then also being surrounded with those who want the miracle along with you, choosing the miracle, you know, questioning it together. And there's a real power in that when your goal is a miracle. So yeah. Did I answer your question?
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. And, you know, that was what the thing was with David. You know, when I met him, you know, I had been studying, and then, you know, and having my own miracles. I ended up, you know, starting my own company. It was just miracles. The company was called Abundant Nursing. It was just a miracle. And I met David, and, you know, this was a whole new concept to me to, you know, practice no private thoughts and no people pleasing. And I would just like practice it with them and just say whatever I was saying. And there was an experience. It was like another kind of relationship that I had never experienced before, because I could feel that our minds were joining in a real purity. And like whatever I would say to him, he wasn't believing at all. It was like real true empathy. And so I was experiencing like really a speed up actually in my own mind of letting go of the beliefs, because I didn't have anyone joining me in the illusions. And I loved it. It was like, oh, I want to just keep exposing, you know, so that I could heal these thoughts and these beliefs, and someone being able to hold the space for me.
Yeah. Well, that's beautiful. And not an experience that everybody has, where like you can release your private thoughts and it's like, oh, okay, I don't believe those, but thanks for sharing them.
And listen, David, he that was what I couldn't believe. Like I would say things to him and not pretending, I could really experience that it didn't affect him at all. Like whatever I was saying, you know, almost like, how about this, if I share this, you know, it was like he was totally in a space of holding the truth for me always. It was a real miracle. And I thought, oh my God, I could really feel my own healing. And now, you know, for me, that's not anything that I even, you know, I feel like the relationships that I have now are, you know, just honest. They're honest. And there's not all this projection and all of this stuff that I used to go through anymore. It's this real inward journey for me now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I feel like that's really kind of like the relationship, even here in the community, you know, for me, it's an inward thing. And it's not almost the holy relationship. Even my relationship with David has changed really dramatically, which is so beautiful, because almost like now it's almost like whatever the healing that was needed between me and him, it's like, it's almost like it's transferred into this vertical thing now, where it's not almost like I don't even really need him like I used to in the past. It's like we come together in our sameness, in our own relationship with God together. You know, it's like that solidness together.
Beautiful.
There it is.
There it is. You
know, that's the growth.
Yeah. And it's really beautiful, because it's like, you know, what's so beautiful is that we both want, you know, for all of us, we all want each other to be happy. You know, we want each other to be happy. And we also know that our happiness comes from ourselves, not with other people or with anything, but in our own inward relationship with God. And it's like, that's what we celebrated. And that's what our celebration is. That's why we live together more in our like, and then we come together in projects or whatever. But, you know, really it's this, you know, I spend a lot of time in quiet, you know, in my own juiciness, you know, and then I come out and I get to share it with everyone or whatever. And then I go back into my juiciness. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's kind of just the way my life is now.
Yeah.
Well, the juiciness leads us to our next question. What is your favorite comfort food, Lisa?
It's so funny. You know, I love French fries. That's what I love. I know I love to go, you know, down here is so fun because there's a million restaurants down in here in IHE. You get every day you can choose a different restaurant. But I feel like for me, it's just some good old fashioned French fries.
Yeah, I hear you. When they're just
any
right.
Cut? Thin what? Cut? Any kind of cut? Thin cut?
waffle cut?
Right.
No, straight cut. Straight cut.
Straight okay. cut.
With just salt. I don't like anything else on it.
Yeah, the thinner the better, or you know.
Oh no, I like them a little thicker. No, but I don't like steak fries. I like just regular fries. You know, that's the beautiful thing. You know what's so beautiful is that, you know, you put the kingdom of heaven first and all things are added, and even your French fries are added to you, you know? So beautiful, because it's like Jesus, it's like you, the more and more you go into this inward, you know, direct experience, the less and less you need. You know, my needs are really, really simple. If you would look in my refrigerator, there's hardly anything in there. You know, it's like less and less and less and less. You don't need all this, you know. I'd rather stay at home too, you know, and not go out, because it's like down here, there's so many, you know, ways to be distracted.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just am so grateful that my life has, you know, really come into full, you know, yeah, in my devotion. It really reflects my devotion with God.
Mm-hmm. Well, Lisa, this was such a great podcast. Thanks so much for coming on and sharing your miracle voice. Is there anywhere you want to point listeners to follow you or connect with you in any way?
Well, I can give my email address if anybody wants to contact me. My email address, you're going to love this one, Tam. Now I am free 111 at yahoo.com.
I love it. I do.
Well done. Well,
okay. Thank you so much. It's such an honor.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa. Take
care. Okay. Many blessings.
Thanks so much for listening today. Please subscribe to Miracle Voices by hitting the subscribe button on your podcast app. If you are enjoying these conversations, please consider leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever podcast app you use. And lastly, please visit us at miraclevoices.org and join our newsletter so we can stay connected. Until the next podcast, I want to leave you with my favorite course quote, "When you want only love, you will see nothing else."